Energy Stew with Peter Roth, Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And this is a show about dragons. We love dragons. This is your own dragon. It's about dancing with your dragon. And it is a remarkable experience and a growth experience. And to help us understand how that to do that better, we actually have the author of a book called Dancing with Your Dragon, Sherry Richards. Sherry, welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter. Thanks.
I'm so glad that you can join us and that you wrote this book. I'm fascinated by it because it is so helpful. It has so much in it that allows us to understand our dragon.
Absolutely.
And it's so, it makes life so much more interesting with all of our stuff, all that we're managing and dealing with and annoyed by and struggling to find answers for. This is an opportunity to put it into the context in your book that has methods and explanations, too.
Exactly. And, you know, I wrote this book, Peter, because I didn't like myself. For years and years and years and years, I just didn't like myself. But I've been on a spiritual journey since I was very young, studied metaphysics, studied many, many things. And eventually I had a spiritual awakening, and I was able to discover a way to begin to like the parts of myself that I didn't like. And that, of course, opens up the heart and allows me to accept myself. And then soon I do start liking myself. And that's kind of what Dancing with the Dragon is all about. Dragon for me represents unclaimed, rejected, disowned parts of ourselves that we just kind of want to pretend we don't have because we're not supposed to, because they're not nice or they're not good, or in terms of whatever our context is of good or nice, the dragon is not that. It's power.
But in your book, you talk about how it's an opportunity. It's not something we want to run away from.
Absolutely not. No, because every energy has power. And when we disown parts of ourselves, we're disowning part of our being, part of our power, part of our energy, part of our life force. And so the dragon's such an interesting symbol because, you know, in the Western world, the dragon and the devil are kind of related. And, you know, the dragon has a bad connotation, and the dragon is something evil, something you're meant to slay. But in the East, the dragon is revered. Like in China, they got dancing dragons everywhere. Why? Because it's power. And so to live on Earth in our bodies, fully here, fully present, fully alive, fully awake, we want to be able to access all of our power. And when we push some of it away because we're afraid of it or we don't like it or we judge it or whatever, then we're not fully whole, we're not fully here or present. So that's what dancing with your dragon is all about. It's about going in there, coming to the part of yourself that you don't like, embracing it, allowing it, and then in that process it transforms. It begins to dance. The energy moves.
Well, the book is so helpful in understanding these inner processes that we go through. You have a lot of work on our wild child.
Yes.
And using a magic mirror.
Yeah, exactly. The wild child for me was the part of me that somehow I decided was bad and locked her in a jail. This is what I discovered through a journey. I have kind of an interesting story. I had a mother that when I was 19 years old ran off with my boyfriend. And then she later went off to India and became a spiritual teacher. And
But also your boyfriend wasn't an older boyfriend.
No, he was my age. She was 40, yes.
Yeah, that was
kind
strange.
Of an important point.
Right, yeah.
Which I guess is more common now with the cougar thing and all of that. But back then, I'll age myself, it wasn't very common. And I came from a fairly traditional, nice Jewish family. And it just was like, what? what's happening here?
Well, your mother wasn't that traditional. You write,
obviously.
She was not a doting mother.
No, not a doting mother, and but the family itself, you know, was traditional to speak of. She was a groundbreaker. She woke people up, and she didn't believe in taboos, and you know, she did what she felt she needed to do for herself, and it wasn't always in consideration of what was going on with other people.
Right.
But in the process, she woke herself up. She reclaimed herself, woke herself up spiritually, and she became a pretty good spiritual teacher.
Although your spirit was somewhat bent when you were young, conditioned by her inability to nurture you the way you needed.
Absolutely, because what I longed for more than anything else was love. And in particular, I wanted her love, mommy love. And I look at it that was part of my personal journey, is that I had to wake up and discover this mommy inside of me, which was the lesson for me of the whole process, because I do believe that everything happens for a reason. I've believed that my entire adult life for sure. And allowing for that belief helps me to take responsibility for what's going on in my life, and that allows me to empower myself, because if I just continue to blame her and blame her and blame her, I lose that energy. That's another part of the energy that's going out and not coming in. So you asked me before, I guess you were asking me about the magic mirror and the wild child. So the wild child for me, a lot of it got tied up in a lot of this anger that I had toward my mother, but she went on a spiritual journey. I was also on a spiritual journey. There was a lot of teachings against anger, so there was a lot of judgment on the anger. So that wild child and all of her magic kind of got stuck down in a jail, is the way that I saw it in my own inner world, from a judge part. And that's kind of what happens for so many of us, this judge in our head that tells us all day long what's wrong with us, how we're bad, what we shouldn't be doing, how we're too fat, we're too thin, we're not smart enough, we said something stupid, we're never going to get what we want, you're not worth it. All of these kinds of thoughts that happen in the head all day long force this poor little child deeper and deeper and deeper inside. And the child is just like a symbol for our emotions. And so when you judge yourself all day, what happens is you make yourself feel bad. You may not know why you feel bad, but if you become conscious enough of what's happening in your head, the actual thoughts that are playing, you can begin to recognize that, wow, that thought has a direct effect on how I feel. Just like if someone you really cared about, you said, you know what, that was really stupid what you just did there, and you look horrible. Anyway, you're having a bad hair day. What's wrong with you? Somebody you really care about says that to you, feel bad.
Well, there are a lot of ways that we can make ourselves feel bad in our inner judgment, and sometimes we can't stop that. So then what?
Well, what you do is, if once you notice that you've made yourself feel bad, you can stop and breathe into it and just allow it. A lot of my book is about allowance. And so when you allow the feeling to be as it is, and this is a process of opening the heart, when you just allow it, it starts to transform. It starts to move. It starts to let go. And then you start to catch yourself. You start to become aware of that pattern in the head and catch it. One of the tricks that I use, which I describe in the book, I call the divine hum. I don't know if you've ever noticed it, Peter, but I started to notice that if I listen deep inside my head, this is like the sound current. Deep inside my head, there's like this little hum. It's a high-pitched frequency.
Okay.
And if you listen to it, it connects you to the divine realms. It's a meditation technique in a way. And once you discover it, then when I notice my inner judge is beating me up, I just listen to the hum. That's something that I do. Or you can put your hands on your heart and breathe. Or you can dance. Put on some music that you really like. Anything that you can do to shift the thought process that's underway and to move the energy, that allows you to stop the process that's happening and to move into a new state. And then you just have to practice it. You have to do it over and over and over again until eventually the habit is broken and you're not beating yourself up all day long.
So this is developing that dance with your dragon.
Yes, Exactly. Dancing with that dragon of self-judgment, of hatred. And the magic mirror that we tried to get to a little bit ago, and I went off in a million other directions, is actually a technique that you can use to wake up to the fact when you are judging. Because if you're looking out into the world and you're judging someone else, you're really just judging yourself.
Yeah, I like that, and it's an understandable technique that a lot of us who have been teaching for a while know that that people out there represent our shadows. They represent our dragons, and they need that. We can use that.
Absolutely.
So that's what the mirror is. The mirror is your recognition in others of your own stuff. Can you explain that a little more?
Sure. So let's say that you have a problem with someone who is needy, for example. Too needy, or maybe too distant. It can be either way. If you're in your relationship with a partner, and you want them to either be closer or you want them to be farther, whichever way is triggering you, if you stop and notice inside yourself that very part. For example, the exercise I give, let's say something's bothering you, a particular person is bothering you in some kind of way, whatever the situation may be. And a really good exercise that you can do is to just describe that person in two or three words, the first two or three words that come to your mind. And let's say they've done something to you and your feelings are hurt, and the first two or three words that come to mind are, they're angry and they're controlling.
Okay.
So then what you do is you stop and you scan your own body for where anger and controlling energy live inside of you, because they're mirroring something in you that you haven't come to total acceptance with. And when you scan your body then for that energy, just kind of feel inside, where does that resonate, anger? Where does the controlling part live in me?
And what would be an example of what you would find?
What you would find is, in me, what I find is a contraction or something that I'm not totally comfortable with. So I find like a tension or a vibration. I find when I invite people to do this that they're able to do it somehow, even though they may not understand it mentally, but they're able to just kind of go into their body and discover that, oh, yeah, that feeling of that person that I don't like is in my throat.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you just go to your throat, and as soon as you find the feeling, all you have to do is just allow it. You don't have to change it. You don't have to make it different. You don't have to readjust your opinion of the other person. You don't have to do anything on the mental. You just allow it to be as it is.
It's, oh, look at me. Look what I've done to myself. And that's okay, because now I know that I'm doing that.
Yeah.
And then I guess our unconscious brain goes to work.
Yes, exactly, like that. And in the acceptance, then you become more conscious. You say, okay, well, that person was mean and controlling and angry in that moment. But you know what? Sometimes I might be like that too. And it's okay, because I'm not perfect and they're not perfect. And that's not really who they are. They are maybe angry and mean and controlling in that moment, but there's probably a huge more to them than just that. They have a soul. They have a beautiful being, a little child somewhere inside. And so for me, what this process allowed me to do for myself, and it's maybe a little bit different approach than other people take, I found that I had a lot of gunky, icky parts that I didn't like, that I was judging, angry, mean, controlling, greedy, whatever that stuff is. And I wanted to be more spiritual.
Well, you were a good little girl, so you couldn't be those things.
I couldn't be those things, right? Because I was identified with being this sweet, nice, light, loving, caring, you know, wonderful girl that everyone should love.
So you were repressing those feelings that you see in others, and when they show them, it scares you, because then you kind of are caught with your hiding places.
Exactly, like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that's what the magic mirror allowed for me to do, is to begin to accept and own and love those parts of myself, and acknowledge the fact that I have all of that, and so does just about everyone, because we're all human and we have all these different qualities and possibilities that vibrate and dance inside of us. And once we can accept it all, then when someone else acts mean to me, I don't have to go into a big reaction about it. Or if someone else gets controlling, I don't have to go into a big reaction. And that doesn't mean I don't sometimes. I still have a little girl and what I call my emotional body, and she still gets her feelings hurt at times. But it's not a big, hairy deal. It doesn't last for days. I don't get in big fights with my husband. You know, and I used to have horrible relationship problems with previous men in my life.
Well, that's because you're using your dragonometer.
Yes, exactly. I'm using my dragonometer, which is another tool I put in the book. And it's simply just a way to become conscious. It's just a fun little device for saying, notice, what are you doing? What are you thinking? Where are you? How are you using your energy? How are you using your power? Are you focused out or are you focused in? Are you focused up or down? I also talk about the vertical versus the horizontal ways of living in my book. And the horizontal way means that you're constantly looking out into the world for the world to make you happy. So you're looking for more money, you're looking for more love, you're looking for recognition, you're looking for physical stimulation, sex, all the kinds of things that we normally think are going to make us feel good. And they can, and they will, but it's momentary. That's horizontal. If you look vertically toward the divine, which to me is the source of all energy, the ultimate source of all energy, and you learn to change your attention so that you're more looking for energy to come down from above, then what happens is everything goes into an alignment. You're able to be more conscious in the moment of what's happening. You're able to have a value system that allows you to choose a vibration that's going to open up possibilities. And it frees energy to dance, and it frees your soul to guide you towards your life purpose more easily.
And what you say in the book, sorry to interrupt,
because
you were pushing a button about the dragon, and actually when you dance with your dragon, the dragon can be very helpful as well as part of the struggle.
Absolutely, because the dragon is just energy. I like the analogy that, you know, energy is neither good nor bad. It's just energy. And it's how we use the energy that makes it helpful or harmful. And a good example of that is electricity. My gosh, electricity is one of the most useful energies that we have on the planet. But if a wire is, you know, not installed properly or gets a short in it or something like that, it can be a fire hazard and your whole house can go up in flames. And so electricity, it's wonderful, but it's also dangerous if you're not aware of how you're using it. And so the dragon is like our power. And the dragon is, you can look at it like the medulla oblongata or the reptilian brain, the survival parts of our being. You know, we come evolution on the evolutionary scale. There's many, you know, I'm not a scientist, and I don't normally like to get into this kind of stuff. But
and we don't know that the scientists have it right anyway, but go ahead.
Yeah, right. But I'd like the idea that we're evolving from humans to angels.
That's great.
Yeah, it comes from the esoteric teachings, and I just think that's wonderful. And then there's actually, you know, plants that are evolving to animals, and animals are evolving to humans, and humans are evolving to angels. Who knows if that's true or not, but I kind of like the idea. So in the meantime, as we're on our journey to become angels, we're still struggling with the animal parts of our being. And the animal parts of our being are into survival mode. And survival mode comes from the belief that there's not enough. You know, that they say that somehow if the guys that are fighting over food, if there's just a little bit of food, then who's going to win it, and who's going to eat it, and who's going to survive? If you're attached to your physical body and that's what you believe is important to keep alive, then, you know, you're going to kill each other for the food. But, and this is a lot of the spiritual stuff that I learned from my mother when she came to Sedona and started a mystery school, and I had to learn a lot of techniques from her that helped me heal a lot of the wounds inside of myself that were basically initiated from an action she took many years prior. So she was not a good mother, but she was a great spiritual teacher.
Well, we know that we're evolving now so that these aspects of fear and lack are transforming themselves. And
yes.
We can look at having more abundance in the world and not have to fall back on such a primitive nature.
Yeah, exactly. And it comes from trust. And the
right.
more that you trust, then the abundance can show up in your life. And then the other piece that I like about it is if it's not there, if you can just accept what is there, then that creates a shift. There's this wonderful right. teaching story that I like to share. It's not in my book, but it's still one of my favorites. And it's the story of a man who's dancing naked under a tree. And he's dancing and dancing and dancing. And this king comes along, and he rides by the tree every day, and he sees the guy dancing as he rides by on his horse. And he's like, whatever that guy has, I really want some of that. So one day he invites the guy to come to his castle, and he gives him fine clothes, and he puts him at the table, and he gives him, you know, the most wonderful food, and beautiful women are talking to him. And the guy's laughing, and he's having a great time, and he's enjoying the food. And the king's looking at him, and he's starting to get resentful. I gave him all this stuff, and look at him. He's just taking advantage, and he's eating, and he's enjoying the women. You know, I'm not happy with this guy anymore. I'm kicking him out of here. So then he takes him back to the tree and takes all his clothes away, and now the guy's under the tree, and he's dancing all day, and he's happy. He's dancing under the tree. He's having a great time. The king just doesn't get it. He's happy when he's got the food, and he's happy when he's under the tree dancing. And so finally one day the king says, I really need to know what it is that you have. I want some of this. And the guy says, fine, follow me. So they start on a journey, and they're journeying down and for miles, and finally they reach this one point, and the guy is about to step over a little border, and the king says, no, I can't go any farther. This is the end of my kingdom. I can't go farther than this. And the guy says, well, that's your problem. So the guy is basically not identified. He's not identified to whether he has the girls and the food or he doesn't have the girls and the food. He is happy because he's not attached.
Well, you have a part in your book that's about renaming things. And that's perfect for this story.
About renaming things.
Yes.
You're going to have to remind me that part
okay.
of my book. Sorry.
It's where you look at a table and you call it a pencil.
Yes, exactly. Right. So when you want to disidentify from the attachments we have to the material world and from the mind is such an interesting thing because it categorizes everything. And so that it can quickly identify, okay, that's a couch, that's a pencil, that's a table, that's my husband, that's my girlfriend, that's my daughter. And then you're just like, okay, I don't need to know anything more about them or that.
Or that they're just boxed in now.
Yeah, and, they're just boxed right. in. They're in a category. So then when you walk around a room, a great exercise is to just walk around a room, and when you look at a table, call it a pencil. When you look at the ceiling fan, call it a dog. Just whatever comes to your mind. Do that for about 5 minutes. And when you're done, your mind will be jangled. And when your mind gets jangled, it's kind of like a meditation technique that allows you to open up and allow in the divine energy, because the divine gets stuck when it hits the mind. In my book, I break it down into four worlds. The physical world, which if you're looking at it vertically on a piece of paper would be on the bottom. Then on top of that is the emotional world. And then on top of that is the mental world. And on top of that is the spiritual world. So it's kind of like your body, the lower chakras to the higher chakras.
Mm-hmm.
And so the mental world is between the emotional world and the spiritual world. But we're mostly in it. We're like stuck in our heads most of the time because that's the kind of society that we live in.
So this is a way of backing up and seeing the whole bundle.
Yeah, it's a way of like getting out of your head, because doing that exercise jangles the mental categorizations and allows energy to just become energy. So then when you're not looking at your husband or your daughter as like, oh, yeah, that's my husband, that's my daughter, then you can meet them with a different aliveness. And you can find a part of them that maybe you didn't even know was there. Something deep inside, something that's intimate and alive and juicy and happening. And we all want to be met at that deep, deep place.
Well, your book is so full of opportunities of new choices and claiming your inner gold.
Yes, the gold, which is a wonderful symbol. You know, when I began to write the book, I was working with the dragon as a symbol, which I learned that years ago as a young metaphysician working with my dreams. And if you want to understand a symbol, you describe its attributes. And one of the things that a dragon does is it hoards gold, and it protects it. And so what I really discovered is gold is just a symbol for energy, for life force. When you have gold, you can buy anything. You can usually attract women or men. You can pretty much do whatever you want when you have a lot of physical gold. But also, you have to work really hard to get it. If you don't have it just come to you, you have to dig it out of the ground.
This is mining for your own gold.
This is mining for your own energy. Gold is simply a symbol for energy. This is mining for your life force. And when you're attracted to somebody, usually a person is attracted to another person because they have a lot of energy. They have life force. They have power. They have charisma. They're shining. There's something about them that's brilliant. All of these are attributes of gold.
I've always told people the way to attract others is to become a celebration.
Ah, I love that. Yes, exactly. My mother's master, her enlightened master that she followed for many years, describes Zorba the Buddha as something that we want to become. And it's a combination of Zorba, the Greek guy who's full of life and celebration and dance and, you know, all of that, and the Buddha, who, of course, is present and aware and meditative. So you're able to be meditative and alive and in a celebration and a dance all at the same time.
And another part of your book that really felt good reading about it is working with the space around us, being able to expand that space.
Yeah. You know, the whole idea that love is space is a wonderful idea, the space of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because space gives room for everything to be there. And I noticed inside of myself, if you've got two parts inside of yourself that don't like each other, for example, maybe there's a part that's angry and has a lot of, or let's not even call it anger, let's just say it's a very strong, male, forceful kind of energy. And if there's another part that's like a scaredy cat, maybe, maybe it's afraid of that strong, male, forceful energy, or it's a little child and a judge, something like that. Or if you have like in animal symbology, maybe you have a lion and a lamb, I think is the way I described it in my book. If you have enough space, the lion and the lamb can live together because they're not right on top of each other. So creating space inside of you is a way to allow all the different energies to begin to integrate and to have room for movement.
And to dance with your dragon.
And to dance with your dragon. I call it dancing in the ballroom of your heart in my book. So it's all about energy, life force, aliveness, and getting out of your head enough, calming down the monkey mind so that you can reclaim that wild child within, that free, loving, dancing, playing outside, jumping around kid that you were when you were young before you got the idea that you had to be a whole bunch of different other ways in order to be surviving on our planet and in our society.
Right. So this book has so many opportunities, so many different ways that you look at how we deal with our issues and how we get through them and create that space and to allow ourselves to mine our own gold. And so dancing with your dragon is the way to do it.
It is.
And we have 1 minute left.
I just want to offer people an opportunity to go to my website, dancingwithyourdragon.com. And if they put in your name, Peter, they can put all my audios into the basket, buy the book, and get all the audios free by putting in Peter as a coupon code.
Oh, that's cool. Thank you.
Dancingwithyourdragon.com.
And it's also a subtitle is The Art of Loving Your Unlovable Self. And your name is Sherry, spelled S-H-A-E-R-I, Richards.
Yes.
And you've been such a wonderful guest. It's a pleasure talking with you. You have so much to offer and help people find their way.
Thank you so much, Peter. It was actually my pleasure.
Oh, I'm so glad. And good luck with the book. I think everybody should play with it and dance.
Yes.
Should dance with
your
it.
Dragon. Right. Dance
right.
With your dragon.
Right.
Fun.
Okay, Sherry, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Thank you, Peter. Have a great day.
You too. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at Progressive Radio Network. And I can be reached at peter@heartriver, H-E-A-R-T, river.org. And thank you so much for listening.